The Heartless Giant. On the whole, there's absolutely no need to be frightened of giants. Giants are gentle souls, perfectly harmless and very affectionate. Unless, of course, the giant has no heart in his body. Think of all kinds of unpleasant things and add giant to them, and that's what you get when a giant has no heart. Such a giant once terrorized a country in the far north of the world near the very top. He'd hidden his heart. It gave him too much trouble. All those giant feelings, too much pain. In its place was a wasp nest, about to swarm. Put your ear to his chest and you'd hear an angry buzzing noise. This heartless giant could shake a man and shuffle his wits. He could crack a skull with his fist like a walnut and frequently did. Until at last, the old king of that country, as good as the giant was bad, trapped him in a giant trap and locked him in a cell. There, the giant crouched, an inch of outside world to look at, the damp dripping from the walls, the dull rattle of his chains, his low, angry growl a ceaseless rumble through the king's castle. Years passed in this way until the giant's voice had grated away to the hoarsest whisper and folk had quite forgotten about giants with no hearts. And he'd be there still, in his foul pit, were it not for a little boy whose name was Leo. Leo was the king's youngest son. He had two brothers who were bigger. Prince Leo could leave no stone unturned, no passage unexplored, no drawer unrummaged, so incurably curious was he. One morning, scouting the far and deep of the castle, he came across a tiny barred window set in the bottom of a huge gray wall. Looking through it, Leo saw nothing but dank, dark, pitch black. But as he turned away, he imagined he heard something stir, and then came a growl, a low buzz of a growl. It was a frightening sound. His brothers told him a giant with no heart lived in this prison with the tiny window. He didn't believe them. They were older, his brothers, and forever teasing him. But next day he went back carrying his drum. Rat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, he played outside the window. From inside the dark, dank, pitch black, he heard a rattle, like the rattle of a chain. He crept to the window and squinted into the shadows. Two eyes blinked back at him. Leo jumped. A wasp buzzed angrily through the bars. Leo ran off. It was true. There was a giant. All night, Leo thought about the giant, his eyes, the low rumbling growl. Next morning, he was back. Rat-tat, rat-a-tat-tat, on his little drum. The giant was waiting for him. When Leo tiptoed to the window, he was there, whispering hello. The giant told Leo that long ago he had done some bad things and that the king had locked him up. Leo couldn't imagine what these bad things were. He worried about the poor giant, stuck down there in a terrible chains. He lit a candle and held it to the hole. The giant was so big he had to crouch with his chin to his knees and his elbows bent. He looked to Leo like a huge sad baby, his yellow eyes screwed up against the candle's sudden glare. Leo said he would speak to his father. It wasn't fair the giant had been locked up for so long. He must have been forgotten. No, croaked the giant, all anxious. If you say anything, they'll make me stay down here forever, and I shall surely perish. The eyes blinked nearer. Would you like to be my friend? Leo was elated. Oh, yes, yes, please. Good, good, said the giant. Good, thought Leo. I have a secret friend. Good, thought the giant, who had shed his heart at last. And he sighed a chill sigh and planned chill plans, while the young prince skipped back along the path, swinging the iron gate behind him, caressing his secret, nurturing it back to his room. And so it began, the friendship between the huge, crouching giant and the little prince. Every day the boy would appear rat-tat-tatting on his drum. Every day he'd tell a little more, hear a little more, until he felt he knew no one better. That no one knew him better. Oh, he wanted to tell the world about his friend, but the giant said, our secret. And Leo agreed, although he would have loved to tell his mother or his two brothers or somebody, but he couldn't, so he shouldn't. So he wouldn't, so he didn't. The giant, meanwhile, crouched in his blackness and schemed. And so it was that one day he told Leo he'd heard a guard saying that the king slept with the keys to the giant's chains hanging on a ring by his bed. Leo had always thought those keys were for the crown jewels. "No," said the giant, "they're for my misery." Leo felt desperate for his misunderstood friend, and a plan formed in his mind. The giant watched it being born and sighed a cold sigh. Deep inside, in the place where his heart should have been, the wasp seethed and buzzed. That very night, when the whole castle was sleeping, when the royal guards slumped against their sentry post and dozed, when the owls hooted, little Prince Leo slipped from his bed, slid past a sleeping sentry, and pushed on the door of his parents' room. He tiptoed round the great bed with its velvet eiderdown, past his sleeping mother and sleeping father, to the hook where the keys were hung. They were so heavy. He heaved them up and they swung together, clanging like an angelus bell. Leo clutched them tight, their black metal teeth squashing his toes, their looped handles framing his face. Slowly, slowly, inch by inch, he dragged the huge keys out of the room. "I've got the keys," he whispered, trembling at the little window. He let them ring against the bar. "Who goes there?" challenged a voice from the darkness. It was the one sentry still awake. "Hurry, hurry," called the giant from the bowels of the dungeon. Leo struggled to push the keys through the bars. The teeth went in and the long shafts, but when it came to the ring, he couldn't work out how to do it. "They're too big," he explained as he heard the giant snort of impatience. "I can't do it." Leo wanted to drop the keys and run for his life. "Push them," hissed the giant. "Push them." The giant's voice was colder than the night. It was icy. Leo pushed. A great hand yanked on the keys. Leo saw its shape in the shadows. He felt a terrible force pulling downward. "Who goes there?" demanded the approaching voice. And then, with a sudden wrench, the keys disappeared, pulling the bars with them in the blackness. Leo heard a sigh issue from the giant, a horrible aching sigh. Then the turning of locks, the crushing of doors. "Don't forget to let me have them back," he said, staring blankly into the dungeon. He shivered again. The sentry's torch was almost upon him. Suddenly the silence was rent with cries. A man screamed, and there was the sound of a crunching like a great walnut cracking, then a broken throaty roar. At the far corner, a door burst from its hinges, spilling light into Leo's face. The giant appeared, first his head squeezing at the entrance, pulling away bricks and lintels, and then his shoulders squeezing, straining through. A giant baby being born into the night. Leo watched, horrified. The giant glanced at Leo, but only for a second. As he emerged from the entrance, first one sentry, then a second confronted him, challenging him with sword and spear. The giant hoisted them up, one in each fist, and cracked their heads together before tossing them away. Then, with the sound of groans and cries proclaiming his release as the guards sounded the alarm, the heartless giant turned and limped off, roaring his broken roar. All night, Leo sat shivering on the battlements as the king and his men searched the grounds of the castle. His father's angry words haunted him. "Someone betrayed us. Only a madman would help a giant with no heart. Someone has betrayed us." Leo's face swam with tears. So let down, he felt. So stupid. So guilty. Every scream was his fault, every cracked skull, and when finally morning came, the boy in him, the innocent heart, the joy in him, they were gone. Those things like his friend, and they would never return. Next morning, Leo looked down and saw his elder brother march across the courtyard. He carried his sword and his axe and his bow and a large saddlebag, which he yanked up onto his shoulder. "Where are you going?" Leo called down. "Shh," warned his brother. "I'm going to get back the giant." Leo felt awful. "Have you told anybody?" Elder brother shook his head proudly. "No, of course not. But I must go. Father is too old." And with this, he offered his hand in salute and turned, young warrior, off to find the giant. "I'm sorry," wept his brother, but no one heard him. An elder brother did not come back. The spring came and went with sadness in it. Every day, more stories reached the castle of the giant's cruel rampage. So it was that one glum morning, perched upon the ledge of his window, Leo looked down and saw a middle brother striding through the courtyard, golden helmet blazing, shield sparkling. "Where are you going?" Leo called out. "To find our brother and to kill the giant." Leo was beside himself. Please don't, it's madness, he has no heart. Middle brother shook his proud head. I must go, our father is too old now. Leo could not stand it, but he'll trick you, he blurted out, he'll trick you. The middle brother would not listen. He raised his hand in salute and set off to find the giant. Terrible, Leo felt as he watched him go, terrible. And middle brother did not come back either. That summer, that year, was short. The winter wild and endless. One day, Leo heard his mother's sobs from far off and came into her bedroom to find her kneeling in sorrow, head against the green velvet of the eiderdown. Mother, the queen did not look up. Your father says he intends to go off and fight the giant. I've lost two sons already. He's too old. He's too ill. She wept and wept. She wanted Leo to promise he would never follow his brothers. Promise me you won't ever go. But he couldn't promise, how could he? Were it not for him, the heartless giant would still be chained and locked and safe in the dungeon. So the next morning at the crack of dawn, dressed in a thick leather jerkin, Leo stole into the royal stables. He carried with him saddlebags stuffed with cheese and ham and biscuits and salted beef, but no weapon of any kind. He approached the stall where his father's stallion stood, tall and scarred and imperious, swung the saddle over the beast's back, and led him from the stable. Off they rode without looking back, their breath streaming out before them, the path flashing by on and on and on. And so the young Prince Leo rode the land in search of his once friend, the heartless giant. 3 winters came and went, their bitter shiver, but he rolled on, determined. And many times were the saddlebags emptied and filled. Many nights slept achingly cold, huddled with his horse for warmth. Many days spent without sighting a single soul. The boy changed slowly into a man, took his own counsel and his jaw set in resolve, his heart firm, his plan fixed. Yet to find the heartless giant was no easy thing. His pillage had stripped the landscape bare. Only bleached bones, spat out ruins, whispered nightmares remained. Where the giant was, no one knew. Long gone, the survivors told Leo as he bent from the horse's neck. Long gone. Then one day he came to a place and knew he was finally on the giant's trail. The sweet stench of blood curdled the air. A village, abandoned, smoldered and smoked. Leo's horse reared and bucked and was fearful. Looking down to the earth for clues, they saw a bird flap, helpless, a torn wing shuddering pitifully. The prince sat down and took up the bird in his hands. Craw, 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 help me, it cried. The giant broke me and now I cannot fly, I cannot eat. Craw, help me. And Leo tended the bird, fixed its wing, fed it bread soaked in milk, and soon all was well with it. Leo threw it high into the air and watched it soar, its vivid reascent. Thank you, cried the bird from the heavens. If you need me, I shan't forget. And with a craw, craw, it flew off, and they followed. Not long after, Leo stopped at a brook, horse and rider, hungry and thirsty, sore and weary. As they drank, they heard a flapping, heard a thrashing, heard a slapping. And looking around, Leo saw a salmon twisting frantic, bleached in the crook of a small crevasse. Help me, cried the choking fish. Help me back into the water. I'm stuck here. I'm stranded. I'm beached up and landed. Me. Now Leo was famished, and he loved salmon over the taste of any fish. But he'd suffered sufficient, this fellow, thought the prince. He picked up the flailing fish and swung it gently into the stream, back to where the salmon is king. Off it flashed through the reeds and green ripples before leaping up in the middle of the water, slapping the surface with its message. Thank you, it cried. If you need me, I shan't forget. Then it plunged back into the brook, and they followed it, zig and it zagged down the stream, for the way lay the giant. Now neither Leo nor his horse had eaten for days. They were faint with hunger. Their progress slowed to a weary jog and stumble, until at last the old stallion sank slowly to his knees and gave up the ghost. Enough, he sighed, rolled over, and died. Leo lay beside his faithful servant and shed tears enough to break a heart. Half from love, half from despair. Then he slipped into sleep. He dreamed he was in his mother's bed, warm and cherished. So warm, his mother nursing him, licking up his wet cheeks, hugging him. So vivid. He woke, hugging himself, only to find a dead horse beside him and not his mother. but a great wolf coiled around his body, terrible teeth glistening, tongue hanging out with hunger. And seeing his eyes flicker, the wolf howled a terrible howl, fixed on Leo's bare, unguarded throat. "Help," howled the wolf. "I've not eaten since the winter came. Help me, and I'll not forget you." Leo had no food save his own flesh. He took up his courage and spoke to the wolf, whose sour breath plated with his own, so near they were to the other's jaw. "How can I?" he replied. "I've no food myself." The wolf nudged against the dead horse. "Then let me eat your horse. I'll eat it and be strong again. Trust me, I'll help you." The prince could not watch as the starving animal leapt upon the flesh of the stallion. In no time, he'd eaten every scrap of flesh, chewed the bones, spat them out. Leo allowed himself a single glance from a distance. He caught the wolf's red eyes contemplating him, the tongue sweeping the teeth, the body crouched over a mess of rib and hunk. "Master, come here," said the wolf. Leo resigned. "Am I next to go?" he said simply. The wolf nodded. "Oh, yes. Us both must go," he replied, "for you seek the giant, I know. And now, strong again, I'll help you. On my back, sir, and let us leave this place." Off they went, a gray dash, a day and a night and a morning, until they came to, at last, a strange garden full of statues, stone men, stone women, stone soldiers. Leo slipped from Greylegs' back and examined the statues. So lifelike were they, he felt a warmer sun might thaw them into being. He passed the bent, supplicant figure of an old woman, ivy in her stone tresses, then came to a statue of a brave young warrior, sword drawn, shield raised. Leo walked around to face it. "It's my brother," he gasped. "This is a statue of my brother." Greylegs, the wolf, shook his gray head. "No, my lord, no statue. This is the giant's work. There is his house. All who approach, he turns to stone." A little way down, the prince came across another figure frozen in the act of straining at the longbow, arrow poised at the ear. It was his elder brother. "You too," cried Leo in despair. "You too." At the end of the clearing was the place where the giant lived, a strange building made by tearing up a whole village and squashing it into a single house. Inside, the heartless giant was asleep. A rat-a-tat-tat-tat-tat interrupted his dream. Rat-a-tat-rat-rat-tat. Over and over, he heaved his huge frame to the patchwork of windows and looked out. Standing there, fearless, without a weapon, beating his child's drum, was the young Prince Leo. The giant took Leo in as his servant. The prince explained how it was discovered he had helped the giant. The giant laughed at this. Had he seen his brothers, stone men, in the garden? Leo said he had. Any who crossed him got the same treatment, so Leo had better be on his mettle. The giant picked up the drum between his fingers and tapped out the marching rhythm, memories flooding back. "A terrible cage," he sighed. "I had to fool you to get the keys, otherwise I'd still be there rotting. I still limp, you know." Then he squeezed Leo affectionately in his palm. "So, my little Leo, back again." "Yes, stay if you like. No tricks, though. No traps. Else you'll end up like your brothers." "No tricks or no traps," agreed the boy and went inside. So Leo became the servant of the heartless giant. For weeks he cleaned, for weeks he scoured, until spick or speck was and span were squalor. Each evening the giant returned from his wild outings to find the fire lit, the hearth swept, his breeches pressed. He liked this. "Very nice, very nice," he'd say as he slurped and slopped his stew. "I should have had a servant before. I like it," he burped. "It befits a giant." Leo bowed and cleared the plates away. He was always silent, always polite, always cleaning, always watching. Then the giant croaked his cracked laugh. "And I don't treat you bad, do I, for a heartless giant?" Leo kept walking away with the dishes. He spoke without looking back, his words light and oddly curious. "What happened to your heart?" Black clouds furrowed the giant's brow. "It's in safe keeping," he growled. Leo kept walking. The giant continued, suddenly swelling, thumping the place where his heart should have been. "Can't fill without it, can I? Can't get hurt. Can't die from heartbreak if I haven't got one. I'm invincible," he coughed. Leo shrugged, impressed. "Clever," he said casually. "So where is it, then, your heart?" Wasps dream from the giant's mouth. "He who pries is prone to die," he warned. "Do you follow me?" "Yes." Leo walked into the kitchen. Then the giant called after him. "But I'll tell you if you want to know. My heart's in that cupboard." Leo was passing a huge laundry press, its old wooden doors bleached and scarred with age. He paused for an instant, felt his own heart pounding, pounding. There, pounded his heart is there. The heartless giant, crouching at the table, missed nothing. He smirked, belched, and slumped into an after-dinner snore. Next morning, the giant stalked off as early as ever. His prison years had made him fearful of wolves. Out he went, all the daylight hours, roving, raging, rampaging. Leo stood at the window, watching him limp and lumber away. Then he rushed to the linen press, heaved on the doors. Inside was a riot of this and that, a tusk, a trowel, a tent, a trap, a towel, a tin, 1,000 trinkets, and then boxes, all manner of boxes. Leo opened them all, big or small. Two were heart-shaped. He tore at them. But there was no heart, anything but hearts. "I'm back," announced the giant later that evening, tossing a brace of dead pigs on the kitchen step. The giant sniffed into the air, a suspicious sniff. "What's that smell?" he demanded, his nose tilted up, snorting like a bellows. Leo pointed at the gleaming doors of the old cupboard. "Polish," he said. The giant's eyes widened in disbelief. "What you polish in that cupboard for?" he demanded. "It's the home of your heart," declared Leo. "It should be polished." The giant roared with laughter. "Did you really think I kept my heart in a cupboard? Gah!" Leo feigned a look of disappointment, then went to the first pig and heaved it up on his shoulders to carry into the pantry. It was still warm. "If you want to know," the giant called after him, "my heart is under the step." "Right," said Leo, treading on the stone step and continuing on his way. "That old step," chortled the giant. "That's where my little heart beats, tick-tock." Next morning, same story. Off stomped the giant and out went the prince, pick and shovel, hack and hew, digging out the step, spooning out the earth. Stone, dust, roots, but no heart. Ugh, poor Leo. He sank down onto the step and feet in the mounds of earth and despaired. From where he sat, he could see the grim silhouettes of his brothers and their fellow sufferers, waiting for him to make amends. "I'm back," called the giant, throwing down a sack, splitting it, and revealing hares and hens and ducks and every type of small bird, all strangled. As he limped into the house, the giant looked down to see a map of his journey recorded in huge red footprints. "What's that?" he demanded as Leo appeared. "Ah, you must have trodden on the steps, sir," Leo replied politely. "I painted it." The giant scowled. "What did you paint that old step for? It covers your heart and should be special," Leo bowed. "What?" guffawed the giant. "You're a daffle box. You believe anything." "Yes," admitted Leo. "I suppose I am, sir. I mean, I fetched you the keys to the dungeon thinking I could trust you, didn't I? So yes." The giant didn't know how to take this. He wasn't sure whether he should feel flattered or insulted. So he sat on his chair and offered his smudged boots for Leo to remove. "The fact is, no one can find my heart," he declared proudly. "I'll tell you exactly where it is and you'll still not find it." Leo did not look up, but continued unwinding and unwinding the bootlaces as the giant unleashed a torrent of directions in a single breath. "Far away, so far you could not fathom it, so high you could not climb it, is a mountain, and in the mountain is a lake, and in the lake is an island, and in the island is a church, and in a church is a well, and in the well is a duck, and in a duck is an egg, and in the egg is my heart." The giant poked Leo with a giant finger, bowling him over and over on the flagstones. "Not so easy, little thief, eh?" he declared. "Not such a diddle and a doddle as you thought, is it? No, your father tricked me once, and I shan't be tricked again." That night, as the giant slept, Leo lay on his cot, staring at the ceiling. An egg in a duck, in a well, in a church, in an island, in a lake, in a mountain. "Impossible," he decided as he stole from the house and began the journey. "Impossible," he decided as he passed his brothers. "Impossible," as he decided as he glanced at the moon and saw in its pale silver his friend Greylegs the wolf, raising his head to the wind and howling long and loud before turning and bounding toward him. In a second, they were reunited and Leo was explaining everything. He knew, he said, he knew where the giant's heart was. He knew how to get there. But the journey was hard, treacherous, impossible. Hold tight, said Greylegs, offering the prince his back. Hold fast. And very tight the young prince held, and very fast, for a gray dash they went, headlong, a breathless blur of world flashing by. And they came to the mountain, clamoring and scrambling, and up at last, and then the lake, wide and deep. Hold tight, the wolf cried again, and hold close. And plunge, splashed into the lake, heads arched up above the water, cold, soaking, chilled and choking, and out at last on the island. In its center loomed the church, and its spire was so high it threatened to tear heaven. Leo twisted the iron handles on the massive doors. The doors were locked. Nothing would budge them. Leo hammered in frustration on the thick oak panels, and above them, the bells rang for the Angelus. They looked up at the swing and toll. Look, cried Greylegs, and squinting into the glare, Leo saw, dangling impossibly high from the bell tower, a key. Then mingling with the cling, clang, clang, clong, clang of the bells came a new note. Craw, it sounded, craw, craw. And from nowhere, the bird whose wing Leo had mended swooped past them in salute before swinging up to the tower with a single beat and pulling the key off its thread. Seconds later, the door swung open. Sure enough, in one corner they came upon a well, and in the well swam a duck. Leo clambered up upon the lip of the well and began to scatter bread to tempt the duck toward his open hands. He coaxed the ducks with each crumb, nearer and nearer, until with a sudden lunge he had the bird firmly in his grasp. But then, just as he pulled the duck out of the water, the egg dropped from its body back into the water, sinking into the blackness. Leo was dumbfounded. Then, miraculously, the water skin broke and a beautiful fish leapt, twisted, turned, and plunged, then reappeared, slapping the water with its tail. The salmon! Back it dived, vanished, surfaced to flip the egg high into the air. Catch it! Howled Greylegs at Leo, and he did, and he caught the giant's heart, held it in his hand. For a second time, the heartless giant woke to the sound of a drum playing, rat-tat, rat-tat-tat-tat-tat. Rat-tat, rat-rat-tat-tat-tat. Where have you been? He roared in his cracked voice as he charged from the house toward Leo. I've a good mind to set you there with your brothers. Leo ignored him and continued the little roll of his drum. Rat-tat-tat, rat-tat-tat-tat. Rat-tat-tat-tat-tat-tat. The giant boiled. Stop that, he ordered. Leo did not stop, but spoke as he continued to beat on the drum. Years ago, sir, you broke my heart, he said in a quiet voice. And now I shall break yours. And with that, he laid down his drum and held aloft the egg that held the giant's heart. The giant was terrified. He was paralyzed. No, he whispered, don't. Be careful. Don't break that, please, I beg you. Leo stood before him, the egg pressed threateningly between his palms. I will break it, he promised. I'll squeeze and squeeze it to bits, unless you release my brothers and all these poor people. Yes, anything. Don't drop it. Careful. Please, please. Be careful. The giant seemed to shrink with each second, his voice disintegrating to a sorry broken chord. I'll do anything you ask, he promised, staggering toward the stone figures. Look, I'm doing it. And with that, he limped from statue to statue, touching each one, mumbling all the while. As he passed, each pose melted and softened and shuddered into life. Leo's brothers ran to him, praising heaven, embracing him. Brother, you've rescued us, they cried. The giant limped toward the three brothers. I've done as you bid, he whispered. Can I have my heart? Leo nodded. You can, sir, as I promised, for I know that with your heart in place, you could not be as you are now. The giant sighed. Thank you, he said, holding out his hand for the return of his heart. Leo's brothers lunged at him, trapping his arm, snatching the egg from his grasp. Leo yelled, and the giant groaned. Now, villain, the brothers cried, for 5 long years we've stood here helpless and watched your cruelty. Leo protested and he struggled. The giant hung his head and closed his eyes. Please, he asked sadly, don't, please. By now, the crowds of liberated souls had surrounded the group, demanding vengeance. Kill him, they chanted. Kill him, kill him, kill him. Don't, Leo pleaded. I promised, please don't. but no one heard him. His elder brother advanced on the giant and squeezed on the egg. The giant staggered back, clutching the place where his heart should have been, gasping for air, short, agonized gasps. The crowd roared its approval. Leo wept and wept, screaming to be heard over the cheering. His brother squeezed again. As he sank slowly to his knees, the giant caught Leo in a terrible gaze. "You promised," he asked. "You promised." Then the egg burst in the elder prince's hands, yolk and white slopping on him. The crowd cheered. The giant slumped forward and died. Wasps swarmed angrily from his mouth. Where the giant fell, a hill grew, and in time, when much was forgotten, when many kings had come and gone, the place was still known as the Hill of the Heartless Giant. Prince Leo lived to be a great age, became king, had 42 grandchildren, and told them all the tale. But in his story, the giant got back his heart and made amends for all his wrongs. Because you see, despite all that took place, a little boy once met a giant, and they became friends.